44. Just when you think. The rain wasn't coming back, Chivette decided, shrugging her shoulders against the weight of Skinner's jacket. She was sitting on a bench behind a stack of empty poultry crates, and she knew she should be going somewhere, but she just couldn't. Thinking about Skinner dying here, about what Fontaine had said. The knife in the inside pocket, its handle digging into her left collarbone, the way she was slouched. She straightened her back against the plywood behind her and tried to pull herself together. She had to find Tessa and get back to the van, and she had to do that if she could without running into Carson. It was possible, she figured, that he hadn't even seen her run out, even though she was sure somehow that when she'd seen him, he'd been looking for nobody but her. But if he hadn't seen her, and he wouldn't have found her there, then probably that bar would be the last place she would expect to find him now. And if he had seen her, then he wouldn't think she'd go back there either, which would also put him somewhere else. And it was possible that Tessa, who liked her beers, would be there still, because she sure hadn't been keen on bedding down in the van. Probably Tessa thought that the bar was way interstitial, so it might just be that Chivette, if she was careful about it, could slip in there and get her back to the van. Carson wasn't too likely to come sniffing around the foot of Folsom, and if he did, he was liable to run into the kind of people who'd take him for easy meat. But it was no good sitting here, this close to chicken crates, because that was a good way to catch lice, and just the thought of it made her scalp itch. She stood up, stretched, smelling the faint ammonia tang of chicken shit, and set off through the upper level toward the city, keeping an eye out for Carson. Not many people out now, and none of them tourists. The rain could do that, she remembered. Once again she got that feeling that she loved this place but wasn't really a part of it anymore. Kind of twisted in like a hook. Not a big feeling, but sharp and deep. She sighed, remembering foggy mornings when she'd come down from the cable tower with her bike over her shoulder and pumped it over to Allied, wondering if Bunny'd have a scratch for a ride off, a good ticket to pull, or if he'd give her a deadhead, what they called a pickup outside the city core. She'd liked a deadhead sometimes, because she got to see parts of town she might not have ridden before. And sometimes she'd wind up clean, what they called it when you didn't have any deliveries. And that could be great, too. Just go over to Alcoholicost, or one of the other messenger bars, and drink espresso until Bunny paged her. It had been pretty good riding for Allied. She'd never even eaten it, wiped out bad. And the cops weren't as book-happy if you were a girl. You could get away with doing sidewalks and stuff. Not that she could imagine going back to it now, riding. And that brought her mood back, because she didn't know what else she could do. Whatever. She wasn't going to star in any new versions of Tessa's docu. She remembered this skinny tech named Tara May, somebody cops in trouble had sent over to grab footage of poor Rydell, who'd only ever wanted a feature in a segment of that thing. No, she corrected herself, that wasn't fair, because she knew that what Rydell had really wanted was to be a cop, which was what he'd started out to be in Tennessee. But it hadn't worked out. And then his episode hadn't worked out, let alone the miniseries they'd talked about spinning off. Mainly, she supposed, because what Tara May had shot had convinced the cops in trouble people that Rydell looked a little on the heavy side on TV. Not that there was any fat on him, he was all muscle and long legs, but when they shot him he didn't look like that, and that had driven him sort of crazy. That and Tara May always going on about how Chivette should take speech and acting classes, learn all these martial arts, and give up drugs. When Chivette had made it clear that she didn't do drugs, Tara May had said that that would make networking a little harder, not having anything to quit, but that there were groups for everything, and that was probably the best way to meet people who could help you with your career. But Chivette hadn't wanted a career, or not the way Tara May meant it, and Tara May just hadn't been able to get that. Actually, there were a lot of people like Tara May in Hollywood. Maybe even most people were. Everybody had something they really did. Drivers wrote. Bartenders acted. She'd had massages from a girl who was really a stunt double for some actress Chivette had never heard of yet, except she hadn't really ever been called, but they had her number. Somebody had everybody's number, but it looked to Chevette like the game had all their numbers, every one, and nobody really was winning. But nobody wanted to hear that, or talk to you much if you didn't buy into what they really did. Now she thought about it, that was part of what had gotten between her and Rydell. Because he'd always buy into that, whatever anybody told him they really were. And then he'd tell them how he really wanted to do an episode of Cops in Trouble, and how it looked like he actually would, because Cops in Trouble was paying his rent now, which nobody wanted to hear, really, because it was a little too real. But Rydell never got that. And then they'd hit on him for phone numbers, names, intros, and start slipping him discs and lists of credits, hoping he was dumb enough to go back and try to show them to producers. Which he was. Or, anyway, good-hearted enough. And that hadn't helped him any with the people at Cops in Trouble, either. And that, somehow, was how she'd wound up with Carson. Rydell sitting on the couch in that apartment with the lights off, watching one old Cops in Trouble after another, looking lost. And she just hadn't been able to handle it. It had been fine when they'd had things to do together. But when it came to just being together, that hadn't seemed to work. And Rydell going into that sad thing when it had started to look like it wasn't going to work out with the show. But here was the bar, a small crowd around the door now, and the sound of music she'd been hearing but not really listening to, which died as she got up close to the crowd. The place was packed. She slid in sideways between a couple of Mexicans, looked like truck drivers, had those steel, chisel-toe things tacked to the front of their black cowboy boots. Inside, over the heads of the people packed on the floor, she could see Creedmoor, with a microphone in his hand, grinning out over the crowd. It was a dancer grin, 10,000 watts of bad electricity, and she saw he had the start of that thing the dancer did to your gums. People were clapping and whistling for more, and Creedmoor, his face running with sweat, looked like he was intending to give it to them.
Thank you kindly, she heard Creedmoor's amplified voice say. Now this next number's one I wrote myself, and it's going out soon as our first single. Buell Creedmoor and His Lower Companions, and it's called Just When You Think You Got It Dicked.
Or anyway, that was what she thought she heard him say. But then the band kicked in loud, with the guitarist choking steely serpentine chords out of a big, shiny old red electric, and she couldn't make out any of the words, although she had to admit it sounded like Creedmoor could sing. They were jammed in here so tight it made it hard to keep a lookout for Carson, but on the other hand, it wasn't too likely he'd be able to see her either. She kept moving, as best she could, trying to find Tessa.